We have a family sense here. Thomas Wolfe said that home is that place where you can go no matter what. And we exemplify that. No one has sunk too low to be able to come here and be among us. As long as they behave themselves. They can be stark, raving mad. They can stink. They can say, I don't want anything you have to offer. Give me another cup of coffee. I'm not ready to go yet. And we say, have two. Somebody's always wanting to talk to our worst. And I'm even wanting to talk to our very best. They're kind of dull, but I'll talk with them. Well, you've met them, haven't you? Never mind. Okay, kind of got a basic idea what that's about. Then you take that to someone and you lay it all out. You get it done. I did mine with my friend Jim. We're about the same time sober. And I knew that nothing I said would bother him. He was as crazy as I was. And I wanted his life to be better. He'd killed some people in a blackout in a car and didn't know why he was there. And I knew why I was there. And I knew somehow by sharing my inventory with him, his life would get better. And I don't know how I knew that, but I knew it. And it happened anyway. I want to talk a little about amends before we wrap up because it's such an important thing. The freedom here at the end of this process, by the way, hinges on the sixth step. There's not a lot written about that because there's not much that needs to be written about that. It says, after my review, I look at this and see if I am now willing to have God remove from me all the things I have found objectionable. Now, what does that mean? It means I have become willing to let God remove from me all of the things I have found objectionable. That's all it means. Two very important things that it says. I do not have to work on my character defects ever again. They will be removed. I don't dare work on my character defects because anything I work at, I get good at. And the whole thing has a condition. The condition of total freedom hinges on the word objectionable. You cannot change me by threatening me or beating me or putting me in a cage. You can change my behavior as long as you're watching, but you've not changed me. You can't change me by offering me great rewards. If you'll stop doing that, I'll give you a car. I'll take your car. Thank you very much. I just quit doing that as long as you're watching. But don't turn your head. Me and the car are both going to be in California before you have breakfast. The only time I ever change is when I personally object to being what I am. And at that moment, I change. So the inventory is wonderful. I've looked at all the things that I object to in myself, and I am now willing. And it says if you're not willing, if there's still something you want to hang on to, pray for the willingness until it comes. And there's a really funny thing I've watched over the years. The minute I pray to be willing, I've already become willing or I wouldn't be praying. Willingness is that powerful. Once I engage in anything and become willing, it's already happened. After a fifth step, in a review, I send people home. It says, take the book down from your shelf. And we go to extremes where I come from. You probably brought it with you to the fifth step. Go home and put it on the shelf and take it down. Okay. Let's just do what it says. We all laugh at it, but we all do it. My experience with making amends was different than many of you. When I become willing and ready to do that, they wouldn't let me out. They felt I still owed them some time. I had 8 or 9 months to go. So thank God I learned that freedom doesn't come from making amends. Freedom comes to me from the willingness to make amends. As soon as I'm able and as soon as I know how, I will do it. I woke up one morning and it wasn't there. I did not have that sense of the presence of God. And it didn't frighten me, and I don't know why it didn't, but it didn't. But I have a habit. I began to pray. Now, I think that's funny today. If there wasn't anything there, what am I praying to? But that doesn't matter. I had developed the habit. And the prayer was very simple. God, I need to know you're here. I need to be closer to you. I need to know you better. And my phone rang. It's about 6 in the morning. It's old Billy Pate. God love him. Billy said, I was 7 years sober last week and I drank. And Alan was 12 years sober and he drank. And we got another young fellow that's just about ready to drink. And the guys tell me that every now and then, if people will ask you, you'll sit down for a weekend with them and kind of go through the big book and show them what it is you do. And they don't seem to drink anymore. Would you do that for us? I got another habit. I said, sure, Billy. And we did. There were 3 of us. I don't care whether it's 1 or 1,000. I really don't care. It doesn't make any difference. Yes, Billy, of course. Then I hung up and began searching for God again. And the phone rang. Some other doofus wanting some other thing. And I said, sure. And I hung up and went in to shave and continue my search for God, and the phone rang again. I don't know, 3 or 4 of those, and all of a sudden it got me. He's calling you. You want something direct? Here it is. And the message that I was getting was, if you would be closer to me, get closer to my children. If you would know me better, get to know my kids better. And it brought me back into the fellowship and into the presence of God again. And I didn't have to go looking anymore. And part of the reason for that are the habits that I built by continual practice. Stand in front of the bread counter and pray. In my present state of physical condition, which of these should I eat? Sounds silly, but you're practicing. In all of my affairs, it says. Don't embarrass my wife, but we're talking about sex. So I hope this doesn't... Well, she's heard it before anyway. It had not occurred to me because of my own prejudices and biases and goofiness. One night I'm getting ready to make love with my wife. And I realize I've never taken the master by the hand and said, if I go do this, will you go with me? Never occurred to me. So I did that symbolically. If I go do this, will you go with me? And within me, there was a, oh yeah. If I can't have God present in that activity, I ought not be doing it. In all of our affairs, it says. I hope that didn't embarrass you. She doesn't embarrass easy. Boy, wait till she gets me home. No, it really is understood. We live a spiritual life, and that's part of a spiritual life. I've never thought of that before. So part of my conduct ideal is that I will conduct myself in such a way that while I'm doing whatever I'm doing, God can be present. Not a bad guide. I will be able to have a sense of the presence of God and no shame. And that makes it so much easier than wondering, what can't I do? What can I do? And it begins to lay out. As you go through this book, it tells you all sorts of things you can do where God will be present, working with others. Family is very important here at Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the reasons AA became a worldwide movement was that the world watched the restoration of family among the AA members in this country. The restoration of family. And today we've grown, it's still the same thing. Family has taken on broader implications. Sometimes the 2 people involved can't make it, but other families develop. Bruce said we can do some of these things by mail. Some of you are going to have to go see the people. Just wait. Make me a list of which is which, he says. And I brought it back to him, and he changed most of it. That same Christmas that we got the cowboy boots and the tree, I went to a drugstore where I was friendly with the pharmacist. He's the one that said, I don't care who writes your note as long as I have one when the cops come. So he knew and I knew that the prescriptions I was giving him were handwritten. He really didn't care. Because of that dishonest relationship, he was more cooperative with me than he would have been had I not had something on him. We got a set of Christmas tree lights on credit because I didn't have any money. Buck and a quarter, buck and a half, I don't remember exactly. That hadn't gotten paid for because I'd gotten arrested the day after Christmas. I told you that I finally got to make amends to the guy with the cowboy boots because of the job I got. This one, he said, I think we can write this one. Write him a letter and tell him your circumstances, who you are and what you did, that you need to get clear. And I had to write the letter and say, you know, I owe you a buck and a half. I make 10 cents a day. And out of that, I have to take my toiletries and things. I need to pay you. Will you accept a quarter a month? It just takes the steam out of a big-time gangster. Just... okay. Some I had to wait for. How do you make amends to the mother you put in a position on Christmas Day to say you and your children can't come to my house anymore? How do you straighten? I still can't think of a way to straighten that one out. But if I'm willing to say, what do I have to do to get this straight, then all I have to do from that point on is shut up and listen while they tell me. It makes me a listener. I think God's marvelous. He's made of me a listener. And you ask me to talk all the time. I'm a listener. Months after I got out, my mother finally agreed to let me come by. And she was very hesitant, and rightfully so. I live with the knowledge that I don't have any right to ever expect anybody decent to ever talk to me again. So when they do, it's bonus time. And for the people that I hurt, I truly, if they don't want to ever see me again, that's correct. So she let me, and in our short visit, because my mother's a truly nice woman, I found a way to ask her that question, what do I have to do? Now, the big book says I'm to be easy on them and hard on myself, so I have to think of ways to... I don't put people on a spot making amends. I found a way to ask it, and then I listened, and she said, honey, all I've ever wanted for you is that you be happy. So... for the last 30-some years, I go by Mom's house regularly, happy. And it worked. I drag my happiness with me. I bring her Jackie, whom she adores, and grandchildren, and stories about you, and what you've done with me and all the fun we have. There was a time you let me serve as your trustee at large on your general service board. And I was busy all the time. Mom's a traveler, but she can't go much anymore. She's 94 now. And at that time, she was still getting old. But she loved to hear about the trips I got to take. I got to go to Guatemala and Puerto Rico and the Soviet Union and Japan. And she just thinks that's exciting. And I was hearing, she was talking to one of her friends once. And she was mentioning that I was the president of AA. Now, I don't take heavy-duty action without praying, so I went home and prayed about that. I thought, I got to straighten her out on this. And in meditation, it became clear, no, I don't. After what I put her through, if she wants to think that, that's cool. As long as you and I understand, I'm just another... garrulous old drunk and just one of the folks. So, anyway. With my dad, when I went to him, we had a different experience. I've also been taught when I approach people to kind of open the door gently, not just dive right into all the gory details. And this was back when, so I wouldn't forget, I carried my little list of wrongs with me. Did you ever see people going to make amends with their little cards? I know that you think that's important, but don't do that. If you're making amends to me and you're reading off a card, why in the hell would I believe you're really contrary about what you're saying? You better know what you're talking about. Keep the cards, but don't take them with you. But I had my little old list of things I'd done, and I opened the door. I said, "Papa, I really need to talk to you. I need to square some things from the past. Use the language of the person you're talking to." My dad's a Mason. He understands what squaring the past means. I said, "I've lied to you, and I've stolen from you, and I've cheated you." And he said, "I know that. I've known that for years. All you can do by telling me the details has hurt me all over again." Mm-hmm. "You and I will have to start from here." Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So I get to live with the details, which I can do because I'm free of them. And my dad and I began a 27-year friendship. We became father and son. We became man and man. We became friends. We developed everything. Moment by moment, we built a 27-year relationship that was wonderful. Had some fun with some of it. He called me one day. He'd gotten old enough and infirm enough that they wouldn't let him drive anymore. And I understand why. Jackie and I took Mom and Dad down to Epcot a couple times. And we got him one of those mobile wheelchairs. And I had to take it away from him. I kept running into people. And my first thing was to stand in front of it so that he'd run into me first. And I got tired of that. Well, they wouldn't let him drive. And I now run my own business, and I'm important and busy. And he called me one day when I got a lot to do, and he said, "I need a favor. I've got three little errands to run, and would you mind picking me up and taking me around?" And of course I said yes, but I'm a little bit agitated. I'm busy. And he had a really important errand. He had this little card from Radio Shack. And if you went by on this particular day, you got a free D-cell battery. And he had three of those. One for the Aurora Mall and one for Cinderella City. It's really important to him. We head out and we're visiting along the way. It didn't take long. The Spirit said, "Well, dummy, you got 2 hours to visit with your dad here." And then the memory came back about how things go full circle. When I was young, I remember one time my Red Ryder BB gun broke. And my dad's trying hard to support this family and keep the bills up. And it was important to me that I have it fixed now. And he stopped what he was doing and drove me down to a friend of his who did that kind of stuff and repaired my BB gun. So we get full circle out of this thing. In my family, it's proper to one-up each other. That's what Brian and I have been doing, you know. Let's see who can say the nicest thing about the other guy in such a way that everybody here knows it's just bullshit. So I got him one day. My dad was not a demonstrative man. You've made a hugger and a toucher out of me, and my mom is too. But Dad wasn't. He had this little office that he had built. It was very narrow and with glass and it faced to the south because he liked to get back in there and tinker. He was an inventor and just a brilliant man. So here's this narrow little thing with his desk at the end, and he's down there, and I'm behind him, and you can't get past me. I said, Pop, there's something else I got to tell you. I have three heroes left on this planet, and you're one of them. I got him. We had a little cry, hugged on one another, and then went our manly way. But later in the week, I was over visiting, and as I left, I hugged my mom goodbye. And he looked up and he said, "Do you suppose I could have one of those?" That comes from years before, being willing to say, whatever I have to do. When Dad died, it was truly a wonderful thing. I mean, it was his time. He had waited for their wedding anniversary. They celebrated that on a Saturday, 66 years together. And on Tuesday, he went into a coma, and on Thursday, we convinced him he's trying to get out, take the tubes off, and he left us. And I know for a fact he wanted to go months before that, because he and I talked about it. He had dry gangrene in one leg, and his memory was going, and his stomach was... He was ready. But he stayed for the party. He knew how important it was to my mom. But when he died, I had an experience I knew I would have, and I actually had it. I've not grieved yet, because there's nothing to grieve for. Everything that he and I had to do was done. Everything he and I had to say to each other had been said. It was a completed deal. And it opened a new door for me, because I wasn't concerned about it during his dying. And sometimes you'll have to face not people who have died, but people who are dying. And you need to be very, very kind and help them. Don't make them stay if they want out. Help them. Tell them it's okay. We're going to be fine. You can go now. Or hold their hand while they come to whatever they have to come to. Anyway, what happened for Mom and I both is that we became available to the grandchildren and the nieces and the nephews and the youngsters who didn't know what's going on here. Their only response to Grandpa, he'd always been a vital, exciting, magic man. And now here's this old man, and he's dying. And we were able to say to him, you know, if you have something to say to him, he can't talk back to you, but he can hear you. Go get it said. Whatever you need to say to him, go get it said. See, I don't want anybody to ever regret my death. And the only way I can guarantee you don't regret my death is that you don't regret my living. Whatever I leave you with is it. When we go home in a few minutes, I promise you, you've had all of me. There's nothing left. Get it now, because I'll never be by this way again. Next time we get together, I'm not going to be the same person, and neither are you. So let's get it done. That was a great experience. I don't have to go to my dad's grave with a letter. It's over and done with. In the spiritual realm, things happen precisely on time, as they're supposed to happen, and no sooner. You get what you need when you need it, no more, no sooner. And I was about 3 years sober, still on federal parole, and some of my memories began to come back. That'll happen. And one of the memories I had is that the December prior to my arrest, in Cheyenne, Wyoming, on the run with the kids, I had written a bad prescription for 100 methadrine tablets, because we're getting ready to travel, and when you travel, you got to stay awake for days sometimes. And I'd paid for it with a check that I'd made up too. And I'm aware I have two felonies that I've committed that have not been dealt with, and I don't have any choice. I've got to do something about it. My spiritual life really means more to me than anything else. And if I go to prison, okay. But it's suggested in here that where other people are going to be involved, that they'd be consulted. Now, the only one who is really going to be involved or affected, is what it says, by my confessing to two felonies and doing 7 years in Wyoming State Penitentiary was my federal parole officer. So I got together with my sponsor, and we went down to see him. Now, I'm a little nervous. What's going on the surface is that I'm on federal parole, and I'm about to go confess to a federal officer two felonies. A little nervous. But I needed his permission to leave the state to rectify this, and he needed to know what was going on. And we talked about it. This is the same one that put me in and also let me out. He said, "You're right, you have to do something about that. I will not violate you if they arrest you, and you have my permission to leave the state to take care of this." And on the way home, Gary said, "You know, it also says here that we're not supposed to be the foolish martyr and just throw ourselves in." He says, you got a job now. They're starting to let you see your kids. You're beginning to build a life. It'd be kind of foolish just to dash in there like that. He said, "I came from Cheyenne. I know that guy at the Rexall drugstore, and he's a decent man. Let's do this. Let's write him a letter and just lay the whole thing out and ask him what he would like you to do about it. How would he like it handled?" Well, that's consistent with what I know. But I'm a little nervous. Now I've got to confess two felonies on paper, sign it, put my return address on it, and send it off. There's no choice. You just do it. And I don't have a real high drama ending for you. I'm sorry. The letter came back. The man had died, and the place had closed down. So there's nothing I could do about it. But within a day or two, it had occurred to me, don't I owe Wyoming something? So I went back to my parole officer. He said, "Oh, don't do that. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to go up to Wyoming and confess to two felonies they cannot prove because the paperwork's all gone. And you're going to have to deal with confused police officers. And I don't want you dealing with confused police officers ever." You just do what you're doing now. And he knew about the spirit. He says, somewhere along the way, you'll get this taken care of. Well, it was about 4 years ago, just prior to my retirement. I was doing alcohol and drug treatment programs in community corrections in Denver. And they sent me to Cheyenne to establish an alcohol and drug treatment program in a center up there, a correctional facility. Went up, got it all done, got it up and running, came back to Denver, and about 6 weeks later, realized it's done. I'm clean. God knows that had I gone up there knowing that's what would do it, I would have screwed the whole thing up. And generally, I don't get the information about it for at least 6 weeks. So that I don't get to take any credit at all. But I'm done. I'm clean. To the best of my knowledge, I'm clean today. If this is the last day, I go knowing I don't owe anybody anything. I also know that there's some things I've forgotten or done that I'm too stupid to have seen. And I'm willing, if those come up, to clean them up. But I'm clean. What a nice way to enter the day, clean. There's no guilt, there's no shame. There's hardly any energy some days either. But I'm clean. I can look you right in the eye. I can tell you I love you and you matter to me, because you do. And if you drink again, it won't hurt me a bit. If you don't drink again, it will thrill me beyond anything I can tell you. Because I will again see a demonstration of the power of God. Because you and I, even together, can't do this deal. So I'm going to come back here next year, and I fully intend to see you running this damn thing. Well, don't laugh, because Jim was in that spot 5 years ago, stark raving mad. I picked on him just like I have you all weekend. Just anything to keep him in that chair. because he was ready to go burn the building down or whatever.
Remember?
Yeah. He's running this deal this weekend. I think he's done a great job, don't you? Do you know who really did a good job? Brian. And do you know why? He got the hell out of the way and let Jim do it. Brian and I have had a little fun this weekend. Boys run into a funny thing. Sometimes the things we feel for each other are so intense and so deep that we can't really express them straight across. So we play mind games with each other. We make fun of the truth. He's a kind man. He really is, but we'll make a little fun. He and I have done that because the way I feel of Brian is so intense and so deep. He's also a man of great perception and integrity. And I can say that because he understands that I am wise. And kind. One last thing. There's a delicious little book I'm going to recommend to you if you're not caught up in only reading AA literature. It's called The Holy Man. I think it's Susan Trott. It's either Susan Trott or Susan Schott. It's just called The Holy Man. It's a little book that came out of her meditations. It's the story of a holy man at the top of a mountain. And in the summer when the snows grow, there's a line goes from the bottom of the mountain clear up to the monastery waiting to get in and see the holy man. And when you get to the door, this little guy named Joe comes to the door. Ask you what do you want? What can I do for you? And then you say, well, I'd like to see the holy man. He says, well, come on in. And he walks with you through the monastery, and the next thing you know, you're out the back door. And you say, but I wanted to see the holy man. He says, you just did. Bye. If you will say, I would like to talk with the holy man, he'll sit down and visit with you for a while. And his message is always the same, and it's very simple. Now, the book is about the story of the lion, not about the holy man. That's what I'm recommending you read. It's the story of the lion and what happens in the lion. But Joe's message is the message. If you will treat everyone as if they were a holy person, your life will be fine. Namaste.